You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to help you plan that unbelievable travel experience. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Hello, New York Giants fans, and welcome to a new edition of the Valentine's News Podcast here on Big Blue View Radio, part of your SB Nation family of podcasts. I'm your host, Ed Valentine of Big Blue View, and you are listening to the Friday, July 2nd edition of the show. Thought we would do something a little bit different today. Don't have a guest for you on this Friday before the 4th of July, but this week we have received quite a few mailbag questions to the Big Blue View mailbag inbox. So many so that I have enough to fill Saturday's mailbag on the website. And I have a few questions left over that I thought I would address here on this edition of the podcast. So let's get right to some of those questions. First question that I have is from Josh Schutzman. And Josh asks about a CBS Sports NFL head coaching ranking that has Giants coach Joe Judge ranked as number 26 and has him just below or just above Nick Sirianni, the rookie head coach for the Philadelphia Eagles. And Josh wants to know, whether or not, the national writer for CBS, who in this case happened to be Cody Benjamin, knows what he's talking about in this case, or how I feel about the Judges being ranked 26th in this particular coach's ranking. And Josh, you mentioned the idea that Cody Benjamin called some of Joe Judge's coaching methods bordering on silliness, last season as a rookie head coach with the Giants. And the reality for me is, to be honest, these rankings are bordering on silliness, if not outright silliness. But, we are in that time of the year when we don't have a lot of news, we don't have training camps, we don't have OTAs, we don't have mini camps, we have speculation, we have lists, we have rankings, we have previews. This is the kind of thing that we have to talk about. Now let's look directly at this ranking. When we do these kinds of rankings, when anyone does these kinds of rankings, first-year rookie head coaches, should be at the bottom of the list. And for the most part, that's what we have here in this list. We have as number 32, we have David Culley of the Texans. 31 is Dan Campbell of the Lions. 30 is Zach Taylor of the Bengals. 29 is Robert Saleh of the Jets. 28 is Urban Meyer of the Jaguars. 27 is Sirianni. And 26 is Joe Judge. Now, to be honest with you, I kind of have a problem with this ranking. And again, these rankings are utterly and completely meaningless. They have no impact on the upcoming season. This is one person's opinion. But I look at these rankings and I see Judge at number 26. And I see Vic Fangio of the Broncos at 25. And Vic Fangio with a two-year 12-20 record, a .375 win percentage. You know, what has Vic Fangio done in 2 years with Denver? I mean, we're talking about one spot here, but is Vic Fangio really deserving of being higher up on this list than Joe Judge? Brandon Staley, rookie coach for the Chargers, is listed as 24. And that's a come on, you've got to be kidding me, you know, for me. He's never done it. So how do you rank him above anyone who actually has done it? So, you know, for me, you know, Staley is way too high on this list. The one that bugs me, to be honest with you, when I look at this list is Matt Rhule of the Carolina Panthers being ranked number 18. You know, the Panthers went 5-11 last year while the Giants went 6-10, and you can't judge everything by record, but for me, there's nothing that shows that Rhule did a better job in Carolina or will be a better long-term head coach than Joe Judge. There's nothing from last season that shows any of that, that indicates to me that people should feel better about Matt Rhule than they should about Joe Judge. I mean, other than the fact, if you want to hold some of the training camp stuff with the lap running and all of that, if you want to hold all of that against Joe Judge and look at that and put him down for those things, then you know, then that's really on whoever's doing that, because that's not really paying attention to what happened with the Giants. That's not listening to what happened. That's not listening to what the players said and looking at how the players reacted to Judge. I mean, the players love Joe Judge. I see no reason why, you know, Matt Rhule should be looked at and ranked so much higher, you know, than Joe Judge in a situation like this. You know, rankings are rankings. As I said, they're meaningless. And to me, there aren't 25 head coaches in the NFL better than Joe Judge. You know, we have to wait and see how things pan out for the Giants in 2021 and beyond. Joe Judge is going to be around for a while for the Giants. I think that in the end, he's going to be a successful head coach in New York. That's what matters, not really where he is, you know, on a fairly arbitrary ranking like this. But, you know, my general thoughts are that I look at Matt Rhule at 18 and Joe Judge at 26, and a guy like Brandon Staley, who's never done it at 24. And I wonder, you know, what is Cody Benjamin of CBS thinking? What is he doing here? You know, he's holding Joe Judge's methods against him. He's not looking at the results. He's not looking at how players feel about Judge, at how players have bought into what Judge is selling. And he's not understanding that there is progress being made in New York. So much depends on the progress of Daniel Jones, on, you know, as far as how the Giants do in 2021. But I feel very, very good about Joe Judge as the head coach for the New York Giants for the next several seasons. All right, let's move on to another question here. You know, one of my favorite things that I see people do when they want to get a mailbag question answered is they'll send me several questions. It's sort of like, here's the menu of questions, Ed. You pick what you want to answer, or you answer the one that you think is the best. And I got an email like that this week from Glenn Mossolf, I believe is how you pronounce the last name. Pardon me, you know, apologize, Glenn, if I didn't pronounce that correctly. But you did kind of a cool thing here. You sent four or five questions, and some of them are pretty good questions. And what I'm actually going to do here, I'm going to take three of the questions that Glenn asked, and I'm going to talk about those three questions here on today's show. The first question from Glenn is, which do you think has the higher chance of success this season between the two potential starting guards, Shane Lemieux improving his pass blocking or Will Hernandez moving to the right side? Oh, that's a tough question. But what I do think, I'll start by talking about Hernandez. I think that Will Hernandez is going to do fine on the right side. Will Hernandez, I've said this a number of times this offseason, Will Hernandez is not a bad NFL starting guard. He really has been just an adequate, average starting player, you know, for his first three seasons with the Giants, which he gets a bad rap because that is not what the Giants expected when they drafted him in, you know, early in the second round in 2018. So, you know, there was a lot of buildup around Will Hernandez as the second best guard in that draft behind, you know, perennial All-Pro Quentin Nelson. And Will has simply not lived up to that Pro Bowl caliber player that people expected him to be. I had a long conversation. I don't know if you know, some of you probably read the article that I did on Hernandez when I spoke to Duke Manyweather, offensive line, you know, performance consultant who runs OL Offensive Line Masterminds. Will did a lot of training, spent 2 months this offseason with Duke Manyweather at OL Masterminds in Dallas. And I feel very encouraged after speaking with Duke about the work that they did to improve Hernandez's footwork, to improve his conditioning, to improve his movement skills, to get him more or less used to the movements and the patterns that are required to play on the right side. I feel very good about how seriously Hernandez took his preparation for the season. I think that Will Hernandez is going to do just fine playing right guard for the New York Giants in 2020. I would say that perhaps I'm a little bit more worried about Shane Lemieux, to be honest, although there is a lot to like with this young man. I believe that perhaps what happened with Lemieux in 2020 is, if you remember, the Giants drafted three offensive linemen in the 2020 draft. Andrew Thomas started from day one at left tackle. Matt Peart was considered to be, as a third-round pick, was considered even by his coach at UConn, Randy Edsall, as a player who probably needed a redshirt season, you know, as a rookie. But Peart played a good amount of snaps at both right and left tackle, beginning fairly early in the season. He was rotated in, you know, by Joe Judge, Mark Colombo, Dave DeGuglielmo. He was rotated in throughout the season, played probably far more snaps than anyone had anticipated that he might play, and held up pretty well. I feel pretty good about Peart heading into 2021, you know, that he'll be able to hold up at the right tackle spot. Interestingly, it was Shane Lemieux, the fifth-round pick out of Oregon, who was not getting any snaps out of those three, you know, rookie draft picks. He did not play until Will Hernandez went on the COVID-19 reserve list. And then after that, he started every game. I think he started the final nine games of the season, didn't play incredibly well, showed some signs of being a decent run blocker, of, you know, being able to move the point of attack, those kinds of things. But what I wonder is whether he was really ready to play. I think that what happened here was he was forced into the lineup full time, you know, when Hernandez went down. The Giants have never confirmed this, but I truly believe that Will Hernandez was not ever fully healthy, you know, after going through COVID-19, you know, in the middle of the season. I truly believe he was never, you know, physically 100% the rest of the year, and that played a lot into the Giants' decision to go more or less full time with Lemieux at left guard. I really think that when I look at the situation, I think the Giants understood that Shane Lemieux was not fully ready for that kind of full-time duty, but they were in a situation where they really couldn't give full-time snaps to Will Hernandez, so they did what they had to do. And in the end, I think those snaps, that experience, the fact that he was very poor, you know, he was poor in pass protection, obviously. But I think all of that experience will be good for Shane Lemieux heading into the 2021 season. How much he'll improve, I don't know. I mean, if you look at his physical profile, there are some limitations in agility. But the one thing I can say is he does appear to work fairly well together with Andrew Thomas. If he can become simply an adequate pass blocker, a guy who isn't a liability on the inside as he often was a season ago, that might be enough for the New York Giants as they look to improve their offensive line in 2021. So I would say in all, I'm probably a little bit more confident, to be honest, in Hernandez because I've actually seen Will Hernandez play some good NFL football over the years. I really have to see it from Lemieux, but that's what I would think right now. I think probably I feel a little bit better about Hernandez. Giants fans, let's take a short break here for a word from our SB Nation sponsors. When we come back, I will answer a couple of more mailbag questions from Glenn, and we'll see what topics we get into.
Vacations can be tricky. You already know how to book flights and hotels, but now the only thing you're missing is, you know, the actual travel experience. Because is it really a vacation if you're just sitting around like you would at home? You need a tool to get the most out of your time away. That's where Viator steps in. You can book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected. And 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Listen, I'm 24 and I still live at home. Like, what? For sure. Are you kidding me? My man and I, we attempted to move out.
Yeah, that'll be $1,600 for a studio apartment, not including groceries, not including...
Last fall, the National Association of Realtors released data showing that housing affordability had fallen to its lowest point since the 1980s for reasons of economy, American.
There just aren't a lot of home sales going on. And there's really kind of a standoff right now between buyers and sellers.
That standoff leads to another kind of standoff.
It's always fun being 40-something years old and having to live with your parents again. And I know it's all my fault.
Sir, I don't know your life, but on Today Explained, a two-part series on how it might not be your fault. Our housing reality bites and the American dream is in your childhood bedroom. Series sponsored by Mint Mobile. Today Explained, in your feed every weekday.
And I'll tell my mom, Mom, I'm going to the bathroom, I'll be back. If I'm not out in like 3 minutes, dog, she's like knocking on the door going, everything okay in there? Yeah, Mom, everything's cool, dog.
All right, Giants fans, Ed Valentine back here on the Valentine's Views podcast. And as we continue this mailbag edition of the show, we're going through some questions from Glenn Mossolf. We did one right before the break. Here's our second question from Glenn. He asks, how do you potentially envision the Giants offense changing with the maneuvering within the coaching staff, Freddie Kitchens gaining more responsibility, Rob Sale running the offensive line, Pat Flaherty being brought in as a consultant, upgrades to the personnel, Kenny Golladay, Kyle Rudolph, Kadarius Toney, and potentially better help, Saquon Barkley, Darius Slayton, Sterling Shepard. Glenn, you know, we have talked about the differences in the Giants offense and what needs to happen and what might happen. We've spent a ton of time on that this offseason. The acknowledgement from the Giants is simple. It's straightforward. The acknowledgement is that they have to make more big plays, more explosive plays, more chunk plays, whatever you want to call those. They have to get, you know, more. They have to score more points. 17 points, 31st in the league, near the bottom of the league in explosive plays. That's just not going to get it done. In this modern NFL, it really isn't you grind it out, go 85, 90 yards in 15 plays, take 10, 12, 14 minutes off the clock or whatever. The NFL is really about which team makes the explosive plays on offense, which team makes the game-changing plays, the turnovers on defense, which team scores points on special teams. It's about those handful of big plays that occur during a game. And last season for the New York Giants, they just didn't have enough of those. So I think the effort this year is going to be on getting the ball down the field a little bit more, on creating opportunities for guys like Kadarius Toney to get yards after catch. Hopefully with Saquon Barkley back, you know, Wayne Gallman did a terrific job for the Giants last year. You know, and I admired the way that Gallman ran. He ran with toughness. He ran with purpose. He pushed piles. He got tons of yards after contact. But the one thing that Wayne Gallman is not is a home run hitter. And, you know, obviously that is the thing that makes Saquon Barkley special, that has made him special in the first 2 years of his career, is when he is healthy, he is a home run hitter. He is a guy who can, if you give him any sort of an opening, he can turn a small play into a huge play. He can turn a 5-yard play into a 50-yard play. And those are the kinds of things that the Giants need. You know, schematically, I think hopefully we will see the Giants rely or use a little bit more pre-snap movement. That is something that Mark Schofield has looked at extensively on our website. Hopefully we will see them use Evan Engram a little bit differently on more movement-based routes, maybe a little bit more on the seam routes, a little bit more down the field. Hopefully we will see them find, you know, creative ways to get Kadarius Toney the ball, maybe even using him as a punt and kickoff returner, simply putting the ball in his hands and seeing if he can make some magic with it. Kenny Golladay is another guy who gives them a type of downfield weapon. Not that he's a speed burner by any means, but he's a big, strong, aggressive target, a guy who has always been among the best in the league. You know, since he's come into the league, he's been among the best in the 50-50 catch situations. You know, Eli Manning made a living throwing 50-50 balls to Hakeem Nicks, you know, back in the glory days of, you know, when the Giants were winning Super Bowls. He throwing 50-50 balls to Hakeem Nicks, throwing 50-50 balls to Plaxico Burress. You're throwing the ball up and watching Victor Cruz make spectacular plays. The Giants simply haven't had enough of that. I mean, you have to be able to help your quarterback out. As much as everyone talks about Daniel Jones, you have to be able to make plays for your quarterback. You have to do things so that it's not all on the quarterback to make plays. That's kind of been the problem in Green Bay for a number of years, is so much of the issue, so much of the load has been shouldered by Aaron Rodgers. And you can't ask Daniel Jones to do it all of it by himself. Sometimes you have to be able to hand the ball to your running back, make a guy miss, and make yardage that's not there. Sometimes you have to have a receiver go up and make a catch on a 50-50 ball. Sometimes you have to, be able to throw the ball out to a guy, make some guys miss and turn a 5-yard play into a 20-yard play. Those things help your offense. They help your quarterback look better. They build confidence. They lead to more points. And those are the kinds of things we're hoping to see from the Giants. In terms of the coaching staff changes, I'm really curious to see how the Freddie Kitchens move from tight end coach to senior offensive assistant works out. Joe Judge has said that a lot of Kitchens' responsibility will be tied to helping Rob Sale with the offensive line. But I have to also think that he's in that role to put some heat on Jason Garrett to be a little bit more creative. I mean, I have looked at it and said, look, there's a long-term relationship and a lot of trust built up between Judge and Freddie Kitchens. And I think it's fairly apparent that the next offensive coordinator for the Giants is more than likely, going to be Freddie Kitchens if and when Jason Garrett moves on, is removed, or whatever. So there can't be any doubt that there's a little bit of a message, there's a little bit of heat put on Jason Garrett simply by the promotion of Freddie Kitchens. I'm going to be interested to see how much coordination there is between those two in terms of game plan, in terms of play calling, in terms of, of any of that stuff to do with the offense. Rob Sale is a guy with a terrific reputation for developing young offensive linemen. He's a guy who's done some offensive coordinating. Maybe he brings some new ideas to the table, especially in terms of the running game, maybe how to block the running game, how to do, maybe he brings some creative concepts with him from the college level. As for Pat Flaherty, I thought it was interesting a couple times that Jason Garrett mentioned Pat Flaherty in conversations before he even talked about Rob Sale or Freddie Kitchens. Flaherty's experience, his familiarity with New York, all of that has to help the Giants. It has to help Rob Sale, who's never been an NFL coach before, just in terms of figuring out the flow of how NFL practices work. You can do a lot of things in college practices, just in terms of physicality, in terms of how often guys wear pads, in terms of how often they practice. You can do a lot of things there that because of the CBA and the NFL Players Association, that you can't really do at the NFL level. So there's an adjustment for Rob Sale, and I think that an old steady hand like Pat Flaherty will be a huge help to him in terms of adjusting to how things work actually in the NFL. Glenn's final question, and the final question that we're going to answer here in this mailbag edition of the podcast, regards Joe Judge's comment at the beginning of his time as Giants head coach that he wants to know from his coaches. He wants to know what a player can do, not what a player can't do. And what Glenn wants to know, and I'm not going to read the question verbatim because it's kind of a long one. But Glenn wants to know, basically, he said, Patrick Graham did a good job, finding those things out throughout last season and making good use of his players. But then on the flip side, on the offense, Glenn says, given the difficulties of an inexperienced offensive line, injuries to the backs, receivers, and quarterback, can you provide your take on Jason Garrett and his performance last season in terms of maximizing the talent he had on offense? And Glenn, now this is an interesting question. It really is. I mean, Jason Garrett is an easy target for frustrated Giants fans. There were a lot of Giants fans who weren't crazy about the idea of the Giants hiring Garrett to begin with. And, coming off a season in which they finished 31st in offense, he is obviously an easy target for criticism. He's an easy guy to put on a hot seat, heading into 2021. There are some ways when I look at the season the Giants had on offense, I have my criticisms of Garrett, and we'll get into some of those. But I also do want to say that I think that Garrett did make some adjustments throughout the season. I think that he did try some things. If you look at it, when Saquon Barkley went down, the Giants, you know, first had to turn to Devonta Freeman, who's a guy they picked up in season. And then they had Alfred Morris. They finally eventually turned to Wayne Gallman. This was a situation where Jason Garrett was learning his running backs on the fly, trying to figure out what their skill set was, what plays they like to run, you know, what plays, and into the first few weeks of the season, he's not only trying to figure out the running backs and what plays they were good at, what plays they were comfortable with, he's trying to figure out what the young offensive line that had no preseason, no offseason, he's trying to figure out what they could block. Because remember, even in a normal training camp, even in a preseason, even during the, you know, even with a regular offseason, these guys block mostly without pads. At most, they spend most of their practice time, you know, with uppers or just with shoulder pads on. These guys don't do a lot of hitting. They don't do a lot of real blocking. The running game, even for teams with veteran running backs, with veteran offensive coordinators, veteran offensive lines, the running game is one that takes the most time. Because a lot of these practices throughout the offseason are glorified passing camps. 7-on-7s, you know, 1-on-1s. You know, all stuff where you can run your routes and get the timing and go through the progressions, but it's very difficult to get the timing of the run game down, to understand what your backs can do when you can't really hit at the line of scrimmage, when you can't really go all the way through the running plays. So I thought that as the season went on, I thought that Jason Garrett did a very good job figuring out what Wayne Gallman was capable of, what Alfred Morris was capable of, finding ways to incorporate Daniel Jones into the running game, finding ways to involve tight end Caden Smith in the blocking for the running game. That's an area where I thought Garrett did very, very well. Unfortunately, that one particular area didn't lead to enough points. Mark Schofield, I think, as I've talked about earlier, has talked about the Giants not using enough pre-snap motion. They're near the bottom of the league, or they were near the bottom of the league last year in that particular category. Most of the teams that use a lot of pre-snap motion, that move guys around, especially who use that motion not only to try to get information for their quarterback, but to try to create advantages or advantageous matchups, are teams that succeed on offense, and hopefully we will see more of that. But overall, in terms of Garrett, I want to see more creativity. I thought we saw a little bit toward the end of the year. He did try to, you know, some jet sweep stuff with Sterling Shepard. He did try some reverses with Evan Engram. He tried some creative play calls as the year went on. But I do want to see the ball get down the field a little bit more. I do want to see how he incorporates Kadarius Toney into this offense. I do hope to see him learn from a year with Evan Engram that throwing him the ball, you know, at the sideline, or throwing him the ball when he's standing still in the middle of the field, is not the best use of his talent. Evan Engram is a guy who is better on the move. He's better going vertically. He's better, you know, even on the shallow crossing routes against man coverage where he can use that speed to outrun a linebacker, maybe make a catch and turn up the field. I don't think he's as comfortable in the you know, standing in the middle, trying to settle in a seam, running those hook routes or those stick routes and catching the ball with his feet planted in the ground as he is, you know, when he's on the move. And hopefully Garrett will have an opportunity and has had an opportunity with somewhat of an off-season program with a real training camp and a real preseason coming up. He'll have an opportunity to get to understand his personnel so he really knows what Kenny Golladay can do. He really knows the best ways to get the ball to Kadarius Toney. He figures out, you know, ways to incorporate Kyle Rudolph into the offense, figures out what Saquon Barkley runs best, all of those kinds of things. So all in all, I don't think that Garrett maximized what he had last year. I think I don't want to make excuses for him, but I think there are some valid reasons, you know, for some of what happened with the Giants offense last year. I thought the Giants were making progress on offense, to be honest with you, until Daniel Jones suffered that unfortunate hamstring injury, which really took his legs out of the Giants offense for the rest of the season. I thought the Giants had made progress in finding some things that work and finding ways to get Jones involved in the run game. They were not a juggernaut by any stretch of the imagination, but they were playing a little bit better offensive football for a few weeks before Jones got hurt. So I'm looking forward to seeing what Jason Garrett will do this season. I do have questions. There are things that I want to see. We've talked about those pre-snap motion, the ball going a little bit farther down the field, more vertical stuff, you know, for Evan Engram. Hopefully, if Saquon Barkley is healthy, the Giants find ways to get him the ball in space and not just ask him to bang up the middle all the time. So we'll see how it all works out. I think that this will be a good year to take a good look at Jason Garrett and see if he actually is capable of moving beyond a basic system that he's used for a long time and figuring out the personnel that he has and how to maximize all of the different skill sets that he has. Because this year with Golladay and John Ross perhaps and Evan Engram and Sterling Shepard, Darius Slayton, Saquon Barkley, the fact that Daniel Jones can run around, you know, can run the ball a little bit. He's got weapons. He's got options. He's got, you know, some different ways he could attack offenses. And it'll be interesting to see how all of that unfolds. All right, Giants fans, I think that's our show for today. Really appreciate you guys spending some time with me here as this 4th of July weekend begins. Please remember to subscribe to Big Blue View Radio on all of your favorite podcast applications. Check out the shows by Chris Flum and Joe DeLeon, as well as the shows by Nick Filato. And I know sometimes those three guys do shows together. So check all of that out. Hit the like button wherever you can. You know, give us a nice 5-star rating if you can, you know, if you think we deserve it, if you think we deserve to be criticized here on Big Blue View Radio, you know, please go ahead and do that. Hopefully you're nice about it when you do that. But believe it or not, we do try to take your input, your criticisms to heart as much as we can. So please, you know, rate, subscribe. Do all of that wherever you possibly can, wherever you listen to Big Blue View Radio, whatever platform you listen on. All right, Giants fans, please have a good, safe, enjoyable, you know, 4th of July holiday weekend. As always, stay safe out there, take care of each other, and we'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye now.